So I'm really very happy to be here once again. It is my pleasure to be with you all. Even though I am not able to speak properly, but as there are many interested persons, many interested students, I thought that it is necessary to give some special teachings related with POA, the transference of consciousness. This POA teaching is something very special. Even though there are different types of lineage, different types of method of doing POA practice, I would like to generalize here some major techniques, some major explanations related with the transference of consciousness, that is POA. So before practicing the POA, it is necessary that one should do from the very beginning the accumulation of merit, or before that, taking refuge, and then bodhicitta practices, and then accumulation of merit. After that, offering, through the offerings, accumulation of merit, and then purification practices, and finally, one should enter into the main practice, that is Guru Yoga. So Guru Yoga is one of the most important practice, which is the real actual practice of Vajrayana, and it is the highest teaching. Many people may say that this is Dzogchen Chenpo's teachings, but it doesn't mean that Dzogchen Chenpo teaching is something which is different from Guru Yoga, because Dzogchen Chenpo's teachings are always related with the Guru Yoga practices. So most of the people, they think that the Guru Yoga practice is very simple, it is small, it cannot be Dzogchen Chenpo's teachings. But if they go on thinking that way, it is a wrong view. Because in Dzogchen Chenpo's teachings, most of the great masters, they give the teachings of Guru Yoga. If you know the real practice of Guru Yoga, that is the highest teaching. You need not go out in search of any higher teachings, saying that I want to learn Mahamudra teachings, I want to learn Dzogchen Chenpo teachings. But Guru Yoga itself is the Mahamudra, or Guru Yoga itself is the Dzogchen Chenpo. There is nothing other than that. If you realize your real nature, the Buddha nature within you, if you understand, recognize it, and know the ultimate practice or ultimate understandings, the awareness, clarity, or the emptiness, wisdom, mind of all the Buddhas, standless sky of Dharmakaya's stage. So that is the real teaching. Now, today, I would like to express a little bit, emphasizing a little bit about Guru Yoga. This POA teaching is also a part of Guru Yoga's practice. It is not other than that now. It comes from the practice of Guru Yoga. This four teaching, normally we say that the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, they are always compassionate. And they used to give different types of teachings. And Buddhas are so compassionate, especially to those persons who are obscured or defiled, deluded mind. Especially to those persons who are really very poor, who are really defiled with the defilement. Or something, those persons who did not get any chance to practice. Those who are away from the teachings. So Buddhas are so compassionate that they used to give some certain important teachings so that even the great senior can also practice and become enlightened. No doubt a person who is already inside the Dharma or who is already practicing Dharma, this teaching is really very useful, but it is also very useful to those persons who did not get any chance to practice, who have full of delusions, or because of ignorance, they don't know anything about the religion. So even those persons also, if they are lucky, they can also meet this teaching, they can also listen this teaching, and without any meditation, they can become Buddha within one life. If they are really faithful and devoted, then within one life they become Buddha through this teaching. So that is why four teaching is some sort very important. Most of the people they like, but only liking does not help you. You must practice it. You must think on it. You must use it properly. And try to know your inner mind. If you are able to control your inner mind, then normally all the Buddhas are compassionate. That is why they help you to understand, to recognize your Buddha nature. And as soon as you know the Buddha nature, you become Buddha itself. You, your body, speech and mind is inseparable of all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. Inseparable of your root guru. So that is the highest way of practicing four, actually. If you understand, if you know, recognize your real nature of mind and sits in the stage of Dharmakaya, try to mingle your body, speech and mind with your root guru and stay on that stage. On the level of, say, emptiness and wisdom, from which all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas come from. So that is why it is necessary to recite on that. If you realize that, that is the four actually. So through practice of four, in the teachings of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, especially in the teachings of Guru Rinpoche, in some tantric treatises, it is said that through the practice of four, even though the death comes, but death is not actually the death, that transfers your mind into the mind of Buddha Amitabha. If you practice four, and if you transfer your mind into the mind of Buddha Amitabha, then at the time, the ordinary people may say that he dies, he is dead, something like that. But that is not a death. But that is some sort, a little bit become enlightened. you have become little bit enlightened. You are a little Buddha, some sort like that. Even though you are not fully enlightened, but through the practice of prayer, you become almost enlightened. So it is necessary that four teachings even though it is very, say, abridged or short or within a short period or through, say, without any meditating, you'll get the chance to become enlightened. If you practice it thoroughly. So, here, I would like to express some techniques of doing the poor practice. Before practicing that, it is necessary that you have to maintain your posture, which is very important in poor teachings. Not only that, in all the practices, or especially if you really wanted to meditate, it's necessary to maintain your posture. Through the posture, you can gain the ideas. Or if you sit in certain postures, these are the auspicious signs. Even though at present you are not Buddhas, your mind is obscure, dualistic mind, but through sitting in certain Buddha's position, that will give you some auspicious sign, that will give you some good opportunity. Through that you can understand, or through that you can become enlightened also. So that is why there are popularly, in many teachings, there are seven postures of Buddha posture. That means seven Buddha Vairojana meditation posture. Buddha Vairojana's seven meditation posture. So, you have to choose a very calm and quiet place where there is no disturbances at all. You have to avoid noisy places. Try to avoid that. Be in a calm and quiet place. And sit. In certain places, you can use a cushion under your body. Use a cushion and which is a little bit higher on the back side. Like the same thing we use here, one big one and small one, a little bit. So that your backside, back body will become a little bit higher. You can use a cushion. And your legs should be in a cross-legged. In a Buddha's meditation posture, cross-legged. That is the first posture. Then secondly, your body should always straight. You have to maintain that. This is one of the most important posture. If you sit your body straight, then normally your center channel, inside your body there is three channels, three main channels, and the center channel is the channel where Buddha nature flows, where Buddha nature resides. So your center channel will become straight. If your center channel is straight, then the flowing of the wind is very smooth. If the flowing of the wind is smooth, then it is very, very useful to understand the Buddha nature. That is why your body should be straight. Second. Third one, keep your shoulder straight. You have to maintain your shoulder straight. It doesn't mean that stretching too much backside is also not good. And sitting this way also is not so good. bending forwardly, that is also not good. So your shoulder should be always in a relaxed and straight form. That is the third posture. And then fourth one, your hand in a meditation posture. It is in the meditation posture. That means you keep your right hand on the left hand. And then do like this. It's clear? And then you can give it here, on the left, on your left, on your cross-legged. On that, you can put your hands here. That is the fourth posture, right? Fourth. Then comes your head. Position of your head should be straight. Don't sit your head bending backwardly. That is not good. That is, you have to avoid that. And don't bend down also. That is also avoidable. Not allowed in meditation posture. So your head should be a little bit bent forward and should rest on the neck. Little bit like this, and then you can remain. These should be straight. Your hands on the lap and the cross-legged, straight body, so that your center channel will be straight. And then your head a little bit, not too much bending, but a little bit forward. And then recite on your neck, that means rely on your neck, with a relaxed form. Don't be sturdy or don't be so tight. Don't keep your body so tight. That will harm your practice. Be relaxed, but everything is in position. Everything should be in position. Five. Now the sixth one. Your tongue should touch on the palatable. What is that? I don't know in English, but you have to touch your tongue upward. Touch it upward. That will help you to visualize. Or it may not it may help you to control your mind so that your conception, so that your superstitions, mind goes in there, here and there. So that will help you to control that. Touch your tongue upward. Sixth one. Now seventh one, last one is your eye. Your eye should look on the tip of the nose. Normally like this position, and you should look your eye on the tip of the nose. That means your eye is not closed, but it seems to be closed. That is why most of the people, when they meditate, seems to be meditating, they close their eyes. I said that, don't close the eyes. In teachings, Buddha's teachings also, it is said, closing is not advised by the Buddhas. Yes, may sometimes we can close, but that is not necessary. Because our eyes should look according to the Dharmakaya way of seeing on the sky. That means these are very famous in the teachings of Dzogchen Shenpo. You look your eyes straight upwards. That is also, you are not looking on one point, that everywhere, your eye is sensed everywhere, stretched everywhere. Dharmakaya way of looking. Then, Sambhogaya way of looking, straight. Then, Nirmakaya way of looking down, little bit down. Now, these have a deep meaning. We can't explain it, everything here, but these are the major things that you can do. And sometimes it is also advised by great masters. They say that if you have some sort of problems, some negative things, negative thinkings arises in your mind, then you control it by looking your eye down. It can control. If you look upward, then normally you see many things. Then some sort of creating different things in your mind that will harm your practice. So at that time, if that kind of negative things are arising in your mind, some sort of superstitions, if it arises, then you can control it by looking downward and bring it down and control that. So that is why it is, we are practicing, we are the beginners. So it is advised that you can look your eye on the tip of the nose and then meditate. Looking up to here. That is necessary. So, this is seven postures of Vairocana, seven meditation posture of Buddha Vairocana, which is very necessary, which is very important in any practice. That means if you recite like this, crossing your legs, and if you stay in these seven postures, it doesn't mean that you are Buddha, but you are copying the postures of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, right? That means that it is a sign, auspicious sign, that even though you are not Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, but you are copying their way of sitting. That helps you. It's an auspicious sign. Through that, you can do sit in these seven postures. And then, after that, when you maintain that postures, then relax yourself in body, speech and mind. Everything is relaxed, no disturbances at all. Try to calm down your mind. Don't think here and there. Now, don't think your family, don't think your friends, don't think your jobs. But now you are only in the position, in those seven postures, you wanted to calm down your mind and relax yourself. Now if you do that way, then you are able to meditate now. You can do that practice now. Now when you sit that way, then you think that you are all those things which you have just practiced before, taking refuge to Buddha, Dharma and Sangha. Remember all those things now. And then practice of bodhicitta. That is also necessary. Practice whatever you have practiced. Now bring them into life in your mind. And then the accumulation of merit through offerings, mandala. And then practice of purification. And everything goes smoothly. You have to visualize that way. And then comes to the actual practice of Guru Yoga. And in that stage, when you practice Guru Yoga, at that stage, then you are now visualizing some sort related with the four teachings now. Those are the things very important that you have to think. These are the basic way of thinking, entering into the four practice. Now the actual four practice goes like this now. You think now, this place where you are sitting is not an ordinary place. You think this is the pure land of Buddha Amitabha. You have to visualize that way. When you start the practice, reciting the mantras, reciting the prayers, then from the very beginning you have to think that this whole universe or whole place is pure land of Buddha Amitabha, and everything is empty, completely empty. Whatever you see, there is no reality at all. Everything is completely empty, blissful, happiness everywhere. And in the center of that now, Padma, you think you have to think that Padma flower is there, and the pistils in the Padmas, and on the pistils of the Padmas there is moon disk, and on that you are residing there. That means you are sitting on that. You are sitting on that flower. And you have to visualize yourself, not an karmic body, but your body is not. Now you have to, you purified, you accumulated the merit, everything. So you have to think that your body is no other than Vajra Yogini again. Vajra Yogini in a red in color. She used to carry what? Curved knife. And the handle, on the top of the handle of that curved knife, there is a five-headed dorje. And it is made of bronze. Copper, something like that. Reddish. And you visualize that way. And in the hand, in the left hand, she used to carry one kapala. Human skull. And in that kapala, you think that it is filled with the blood. Now, don't think of this ordinary blood. Now, this blood is from, say, blood of the four demons. Blood of the four demons. Now, here, I think so it is necessary to explain a little bit about the demons. When I say four demons, now don't think outer demons who has big teeth, who has a big body, who can crush all the living beings under his feet. Don't think that way. But there's no any outer demon. The demon, four demon means within yourself now. Four demon is here. If you are able to destroy these four demon, then you are Buddha. Because we are unable to destroy that because of obscured body, mind and speech, or dualistic mind. Because of that, we can't destroy these four demons. Now, four demons. Now, first one is, in Tibetan we say Phungbu Du. Phungbu Du means your five skanda, your body, the demon of your body. This form, demon of this form, that means. Because of this form, we suffer a lot. Because of this form, we fight each other. Because of this form, from ego comes, pride comes, jealousy, anger, every defilement comes because of this form. Now, if you are able to destroy this form, now destroy means, well, by killing this body, you can't kill your form of the demon of form. You can't kill that. Now, only if you can control, only if you are able to destroy the ego and the ignorant, then only you can destroy your demon of form. One demon. Now, secondly, we say in Tibetan, Chidagidu. Chidagidu means now demon of the death. Now, everybody who takes birth will have to die. We cannot run away from dying. Everybody have to face this death. A person who is free from taking birth and who is free from death, that is extraordinary being. That means Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. They can't die. They won't die. They won't even take birth even. They are free from that. Because of our ignorant and dualistic mind, we are unable to destroy this death. We can't go away from this death now. Very dangerous. That is why people, a person who do not have the chance to practice, who don't receive the teachings of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, then they fear dying. They fear death. They don't want to die. It doesn't matter. This body will live. Death means We leave this body, but our mind won't die. But we feel afraid. We fear dying. So here, Chitta-jiddhi means the demon of death. That means if you control that, if you control, you are free from dying, then you are Buddha again. In that way, there is also one demon. Then comes Nyomongbedu. Now, Nyomongbedu is the demon of defilement. Now, defilement means ignorant, anger, hatred, jealousy. All these are defilement. That is also the demon now. Don't search outside demon. Those demons are, even though they are called demons, devils, but they can kill my body, but they can't kill my mind. So they don't have any power. Now the most powerful of these are the powerful now. So it is better to destroy these than utterly everything can be controlled. Try to root out all the defilements, especially the ignorant and ego. Then only you can get rid of from this samsara and become Buddha. So this is one of the demons again. Now the fourth one, we say Lai Puidu now. Now this side, it's very difficult to express in English. I don't know the exact word, but this is a demon which normally comes when you become, say, you are enjoying with the worldly pleasures, especially when you are in the human, the God's realm. They don't have any difficulties there. No problems. No sufferings at all. They enjoy whole life. So because of that luxurious, comfortable, and happiness, even though they are not the ultimate happiness, but the artificial happiness. Because of that, they obscure their mind and they divert their mind towards unvirtuous things. They won't let you to practice the Dharma. So that is also a kind of demon which is destroying our mind, which is destroying you, or which is harming you to understand the real nature of the mind. So these are the demons now, see. So here what I mean to say is, now the Vata Yoginishi used to carry kapala, human skull, and it is filled with the blood of four demons. Now, I told you that way. So, four demons means those demons, not the outerly demons. Now, these outerly demons, now Shanti Deva, I think so, the great master Shanti Deva, he said in his teaching, I think so, this also related with the demons, so I think it is better to explain here. Shanti Deva is a great bodhisattva. He's a great teacher, master. He used to teach Bodhicharya Avatara. In his teachings, he says one stanza, I can't say in English all, but the real meaning is the anger, he says. The anger used to come from your mind. Anger is one of the greatest demons. And he resides in my body. That anger is sitting in my body. And that means he hides my body. He is sitting in my body. But he is harming me at the same time. He is harming me. That means when I feel anger, I just destroy my form also. When you feel angry, then you change your body. You change your face, become red, become angry-minded, showing all the wrathful things that will spoil your form also, your body also. Not only that, it will also drag you down to the hell. When you die, it will lead you down to the hell. So that is very dangerous. So anger is really the greatest demon. And at the same time, Shantideva says that there are many demons outside. You just imagine there is a very big demon, very dangerous demon. Even millions and millions of atom bombs are used to kill that demon. Still, it is unable to kill that demon. You just imagine that type of demon, which is filled almost the sky. Who is coming towards you and he wanted to kill you. He wanted to just pick you up in his finger and just grind like this and make you a dust. So big demon. You just think that way. Even though he is so strong, so powerful, he can do that way. At a time, he can kill many, many billions of human beings at a time. You just think that way. Such type of very powerful demon, even no matter how powerful he has, but he can kill, he can crush, he can kill only my body, but he can't lead me down to the hell. He can't take me down to the hell. But this demon which is residing in my house, in my body, this is a rented house for him, for this anger. He resides here, but he destroys me. He destroys my body. He destroys me and takes me down to the hell. So, never practice anger, angry. Don't be angry all the time. It is very dangerous. That is most dangerous demon than that demon. Even though that is very dangerous, but that demon can kill only my body. He can't crush my mind. But this demon, this anger, is a greater demon. He destroys my mind also. He takes me down to the hell also. So, to become angry, to be angry is really very dangerous. It can spoil you. It can lead you to go down to the hell. So demons, you just imagine, these demons within yourself are more dangerous. So here the Vajrayogini, in her Kapala, there are, say, the blood of four demons. That means, this symbolizes that she destroys all the negative forces and she can bestow you all kinds of accomplishment. This symbolizes that way. And now here, Vajrayogini is in red in color. She is in a standing posture, a slightly bent on the right side. His right leg is slightly bent, bending posture. And her posture and her way of sitting and the weapons, what the weapons she carries in her hands, all these you have to visualize yourself, and Vajrayogini is completely exalted Dakini. She is equivalent to Dharmakaya. Again, you think that way. Very clean, pure, exalted Dakini. Wisdom Dakini. And this body now, Vajrayogini's body, your body is Vajrayogini's body. And don't think that this is again karmic body. It's completely pure. Now, the body, your body, inside it is hollow, empty. During the time of power practice, this is necessary. Your whole body is empty, hollow now. And in the center of your body, there is a channel, center channel. And your body should, you have to visualize just like a rainbow. Just like a rainbow. You can see, but you cannot touch it. Like a light, rainbow light, something like that. Then, inside hollow, if we lights a lamp inside a very thin cloth, red cloth, very thin cloth, say a thin tent. Inside, if we light a small lamp, then if we see from outside, it's completely bright inside. We can see something transparent. We can see from outside the inner house. We can see here and there. Like that, you just think your body is something like that, hollow, and completely light is inside, and it is bright. Everything we can see inside also. That sort of things you have to visualize in your mind. And then inside that body, there is center channel now. Even though we have three channels, Sa, Uma, Roma, Changma. So Uma is the center channel inside here. Now the upper end of the center channel opens up here from your crown of your head now. It opens from here. And the lower channel, the lower portion of the channel, lower end of the channel, it starts just below the navel. Just below the navel. Four fingers below the navel. Navel is here. In the middle of our body, there is a navel. And just below that, four fingers down, the lower end of the center channel just starts on there. Just below that. And now you have to think that that center channel is also hollow, empty inside. Completely empty. And the size of the center channel now. Size of the center channel is not so big enough, not so small, but it's like a arrow, a bamboo arrow, not so big, not so small, moderate one. And that's not so big, but the size is just like a bamboo arrow with the upper end of the center channel opens from here, the lower starts just below the navel, and inside is hollow, and in the middle of the center channel, which is on the heart level, there is a knot. In the bamboo also, there is a knot. So like that, you think there is a small knot. And center channel's collar, now you have to think the center channel's collar is white, outerly white in collar, inside red collar. In the middle you just think that a little bit, middle side a little bit greenish type, green, bluish type, some sort like that, not so bright but. So on that level now, you have to think now. And, okay, this is necessary. In center channel, our Buddha nature resides. It flows from there. Buddha nature always used to sit in that center channel. And there is a two channels, right and the left channels. Which comes, these are the channels which always normally the wind flows, not the Buddha nature, but all these, the conception, dualistic mind, the defiled, obscured mind flows in it. So it won't let us to awake our Buddha nature. Because of this, it is related with the center channel. That is why it won't let you to understand that. Now we must practice that. On the right side and the left side, the channel goes up and it may come from the two nose. It is related with the two nose. But the center channel here. In the center channel, Buddha nature resides in the center channel. Now we must practice to our postures are important. I told you that we must sit straight. That means when you sit straight, your center channel becomes straight. If your center channel is straight, the inside the wind flows, the wind is there, then wind flowing is also very smooth. If it is flowing smoothly, then Buddha nature comes smoothly and it can go up from here very easily so that you can become Buddha easily.